is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
That's true. I am Justin.
And I'm Pete.
Pete, and you are watching Comic Book Club on two places. We are going 100% live to YouTube and also over to Crowdcast. If you're listening to the podcast, this is live. We recorded it already, so, you know, whatever. We have a bunch of great guests for you on the show that we're going to get to in a moment. I also wanted to mention, if you are watching on Crowdcast, please drop a question and ask a question, and we'll get to those later in the show. Also, if you're watching on YouTube, we haven't forgotten about you guys either. We are going to keep one eye on that, read some comments off during the show as well. And if you're watching on YouTube, give us a little thumbs up-y there. Do that. We love that
stuff.
Way
to cover all the feeds, Alex. Just really grinding the multimedia. You're the king of all media, and that's a nickname.
Thank you very much.
No
one's
ever
used
this one.
Yeah, and nobody's been called that before, so I appreciate it. We got a quick request here, actually, over on YouTube. Justin, Scott Carpenter says, can Justin do a brief recap about why you guys are doing this from home on YouTube? So just a brief recap of the past month and a half or so, the whole situation.
No problem. And what we think is, the end of last year, there was a virus that developed in Wuhan, China. Is that a fun version of that?
That's not a fun thing to remember.
Let me just say, I could do it.
I have total faith that you could do it. Now, here's something that I think will be a little more fun to start off with. Last week on the show, we were talking about Cyclops, everybody's favorite character, Cyclops
Not everybody.
Well, here's the problem is, Pete, you hate Cyclops. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. This challenge spun out of the idea that Pete hates him so much for no reason that he brings him up constantly. Just like out of no non sequitur, he's like, yeah, but also fuck Cyclops. And it's like, there's a good Cyclops story out there. And I think we can bring one.
So we made a challenge to ourselves last week to pitch Pete on a Cyclops story. Each of us gets a pitch.
Great.
Pitch him to try to sell him. And Pete, you're going to keep an open mind, right?
Oh my God, am I?
he's going to keep an open mouth that he's going to fill with beer we're doing.
Now, Justin, did you say, do you have one or you have two Cyclops pitches?
I have two ideas, yes.
Okay, do you want to go first, then I'll go, then you go, or how do you want to
go first? I'll go first, yeah.
Okay.
So this first one, it's built out of current X-Men continuity, which another thing that Pete's a huge fan of. So we all know that Cyclops...
Pat. Next idea.
No, that's not keeping it open.
Oh, big Hollywood current X-Men stuff. You can't. No, are you going to pitch me or are you pitching somebody else?
This is some great feedback, and I'm just going to change a little something here on my pitch.
Yeah. Well, it'd be easy to be like, oh yeah, Cyclops just has guns after he shoots people, or Cyclops has claws suddenly. No, this is we're getting into it, but have a little faith. This is when I pitch a producer or something and I get the hard no in the elevator. Never stop pitching. That's what
they say. Never stop. All right, keep going with your shitty idea. Current continuity.
Hold on. I'm not Cyclops. My ideas are great. So Cyclops, the rule is you're not allowed to kill humans. Cyclops, he's had a lot of life. He's lived a lot. He's been wronged a lot. Because I think the thing you don't...
Professor Xavier.
The thing, yep. Not part of my pitch. I feel like the thing you don't like about Cyclops is he's such a rule follower. He's always just trying to like rub people's face and stuff. He's like, he's a Boy Scout and you don't like that he's a Boy Scout, right? That's part of it.
Well, I mean, it's part of it. He's a complete douche he's not a good leader. There's a lot of things I don't like. And Joe Crack, you can say all you want in the comments. All right. You know, it's too bad.
Great.
Keep going, Justin.
Like all Hollywood execs, Pete is distracted with other things while I'm pitching him. Cyclops, the rule is you're not allowed to kill humans. But Cyclops, he's stuck with all these villains who have now become part of Krakoa and the experience there. But Scott is not satisfied. He wants to go back and set things straight for time before the X-Men. So he goes undercover with his pal Wolverine. And they go out to the human world and they settle the scores from all the bad guys, Apocalypse, Mr. Sinister, all the villains that have wronged the X-Men in the past. They go settle scores off the books, under the radar. Don't tell anybody. So it's the two of them, buddies, out there having fun, John, comparing notes on their what relationships they have, and they're shooting eye beams and claws, bar hopping, and fucking up Mr. Sinister's life.
Well, and the title is Beams and Claws, right?
Yeah, exactly.
First off, this is a horrible idea all around, because if I'm mad at somebody and then somebody else comes over and is like, hey, I'd like to right their wrongs, I'd be like, I don't care who you are. I want to fucking talk to the guy who wronged me.
But he is by going back and doing it outside.
I think maybe it's interesting that you have kind of like a odd couple team up. That's fun. You know, maybe Cyclops lets his advisor down a little bit and tries to be a normal person. But I just don't buy it. I don't believe that, you know, Cyclops would, A, care enough about Wolverine, you know, or, you know, B, want to try to work on his personality at all.
All right. Well, you seem not sold on this one. Justin, okay if I jump in with my pitch here, see if this works?
Please. Yes.
Okay, so here we go. All right. In a special scratch-and-sniff issue that smells like cheesesteaks, Cyclops is on a trip away from not Krakoa, but anywhere else, because Krakoa blew up and the X-Men are back to normal, when he encounters a couple fighting at a diner. Attempting to break it up before they get too violent, the couple shove him backwards, his ruby quartz glasses knocked off. At that moment, he accidentally shoots the couple with a blast from his eyes, but they're not blown to smithereens. Instead, they look at each other with love and kiss. Stunned, Scott realizes he's finally developed his secondary mutation. His optic blasts fix marriages. With a renewed sense of purpose, Cyclops heads to New York to try and find the one and only web slinger himself, Spider-Man. And each issue comes with a free digital download of Tommy Boy.
Oh, what do you think, Pete? Wow. Sold. You get the prize.
You're sold on that? On the story of that?
That's great. That's a great fucking story. Yeah. Plus, who doesn't love Tommy Boy?
There you go. That's what I was thinking.
I love a pitch that comes with a VHS rental.
That's the problem with comics. That's why they can't ship them right now. They're too bulky. They got the VHS tapes inside.
Oh, God. It's slowing us down. That's great. That's a great pitch.
Cool. Yeah, you got another one there, Justin?
I did have another one. So in this world, Cyclops, Jean Grey, White Queen, they get transported to Mojo World, where they have to appear in a television show. They're de-aged, and they have to solve mysteries in a small town in America called Riverdale. And the thing is, obviously, the White Queen is the sort of Veronica type. You got Jean Grey. She's the classic Betty. And as we all know, Cyclops is X-Men's Jughead.
Oh, horrible casting. I was with you for a little bit, and then casting.
He is the Jughead of the X-Men. Think about it.
No.
Yes. Not. He 100% is. He's always like telling people, okay, we have to go focus on him. We have to go do this. He's not the Archie.
Mm-hmm.
No. Also, I feel like she would be Cheryl, not Veronica.
Mm. Well, I think we can figure this out later on. We do have, these are great pitches. Thanks for listening to us, Pete. We look forward to you picking up one of our comics. We don't know which one. Yeah. We do have a couple of great guests on the show. Later in the show, we're going to have Alex Segura from Archie Comics is going to be here. Ooh, he's going to be here for our stack section. But right now, we'll see if this works. We're going to invite in our other guest. I'll introduce him while hopefully he's logging in here. Ahmed Amin, he is the writer of the Epics of Enkidu, which is a Indiegogo project that is yet to launch and is being sold as a sequel of sorts to Gilgamesh. So, Ahmed, as we wait for you to get into the feed here. Oh, there we go. Hey. Welcome to the show, Ahmed. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So what we've been doing the past couple of weeks is while comics have mostly been on hold, not 100%, but mostly talking to a lot of indie creators who are still working on projects, still plugging away at stuff. And you have this book, Epics of Enkidu, which has a lot of stuff going on in the premise, but why don't you pitch it? Why don't you give the pitch to us and then we can talk about it a little more?
Well, sure. Yeah. The Epics of Enkidu is actually a comic book that features a superhero who happens to be autistic. And it is, you could say, it's a sequel to the oldest story ever found in human history. And his brain works so fast that everything around him moves too slow, which makes him socially odd and interacts with the world differently. But it does help him analyze everything and see the patterns, and he can see things that can happen before it happens, you know, which could be handy when he's in danger, but not when you try to communicate with him. And it was inspired by my nephew, who is a very awesome autistic kid.
Oh, did you, that's great. Before you tackled the project, did you run it by him? Did you talk to him to get his sense of the project and what he thought about it?
Actually, I want to surprise him with it.
Nice. What a dream surprise.
He's just 8 years old and, you know, he's invested with his own world. So just one day I'm going to give him the comic book and he's going to find his picture in it and he's going to read it. And, you know, I want to see how he's going to, you know, interact with it for the first time, you know, hands on. So, yeah.
Wow, that's very nice. Amazing. Now, you're planning on launching the project on Indiegogo. Why that platform? Why was that the right place to take it?
Well, there's quick Kickstarter and Indiegogo, and at that time, I wasn't sure which one to go to, you know? So when I looked at the layout of each platform, I don't know, for some reason I was drawn to Indiegogo. And there's this movie. I'm not sure if you heard about it. It's called Hardcore Henry. You know, that's first person.
Action
movie. Yeah. I love that movie. And it was funded by Indiegogo. So every time I think of Indiegogo, I think of that movie. And, you know, I thought, yeah, okay. So I went with my guts on this one. So, yeah.
Well, then the other part of the spectrum, though, is Gilgamesh is an interesting thing to be drawing on. You know, there's been a pretty frequent joke about him being in quarantine, how Shakespeare wrote King Lear in quarantine. Everybody's like, well, going to write King Lear 2, but you're actually taking your time here to write Gilgamesh 2. Why did that inspire you in particular? What was it about that story?
Well, yeah, I mean, I visited that epic many times, and especially recently. And when I read that the poems, there was something about Enkidu. You know, for people who don't know, it's about this king who's very powerful, who has his adventure with his companion Enkidu. And for some reason, I thought Enkidu was more interesting because, even in the beginning of the story, Gilgamesh was the villain, and Enkidu changed him. So he changed him and made him a better man. And he was the characteristics of a hero, you know, the thing that inspire us in most of the comic books. I found him all in Enkidu more than Gilgamesh. So that's why I was drawn to that guy, and that's why I wanted to make that story, you know, and based it on Enkidu. And also, I don't know why, it's also... It merged with my nephew because I was thinking about making a comic for my nephew before I decided to make it, you know, to use the epic of Gilgamesh as a center to the story. So yeah, so that's why I went to that that's why I picked Enkidu as the main character, you know. So
Now that we have been stuck inside for so long, do you find that you're doing more work on the book? Is everything else getting in the way of it? Where are you at with that?
Well, that's the only positive in these worrying times, you know, having more time to invest on my creative work. So, yeah.
Cool. That's great.
When is it launching at this point? I know the page itself still says it's getting ready to launch soon. So what's your timeline on this?
Well, yeah, on the 15th of May, the campaign will start. It's going to be running for 30 days. Hopefully we'll reach our goal. And once we do that, we're shooting for a September release. So, yeah.
All right. Very cool.
Fantastic.
That's coming up. So, once again, Epics of Enkidu. You can check it out at Indiegogo. Ahmed, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it. The project looks great. Definitely let us know how it goes. Surprising your nephew. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Definitely. Stay safe out there. Thank you.
Good luck.
All right. That was very cool. And definitely check out the project. The art looks great. It's a great project. Very excited to find out more about that. And now we're going to get ready to invite our next guest on the show. One of our favorite guests to have on the show. We've had him on a bunch of different times. He is logging into the stream there. And there he is, Alex Segura.
Hey. That was such a nice intro. Thanks, guys.
No problem. Great to see you. Thank you for coming on for The Stack.
Alex is just, he's all about setting up the sound cues. It's not about the guest or the fun. He's just getting these sound cues out.
This is just a vehicle for that. That's where I want to aim my career, honestly, is like towards just launching sound cues more than anything.
It's really good. You're really good.
Alex, how are you doing? How are you doing in this time? How have things been for you? You have kids running around and jobs and things like that.
We're safe and we're healthy. So I think that's really all we can hope for. We're kind of hunkered down, not really going outside much, like most of the world. It's been tough, especially with the kids. The kids get bored and they want to run around, but we're hanging in there. So
when do you find time to write? I have kids too, and it's very hard to do anything until like 9 p.m. and then it's too tired. It's too tired. I'm too tired.
It's usually at night. It's usually once they're asleep and everything's cleaned up and you have like maybe 20, 25 minutes to sprint and try to get something done. Because in the daytime I'm at work or working. So it's hard.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing a novel only takes 15 to 20 minutes to write. So you're
I'm on my third one today. So we're good.
And before we get into the stack proper, how are things going at Archie Comics? You guys, it's been a weird time with trying to put out comics. You have still had a couple that are coming out because they were promised to retailers or already at stores. Is that correct?
Yeah, we had a few that were already in the warehouse or in the pipeline. Like Sabrina number one was already at Diamond's warehouse. So we put it up digitally and Sabrina two was for all intents and purposes done. So once it's able to be printed, we'll get it to comic shops, but we felt like we should, you know, keep it up there for digital customers too. So there's some stuff in the pipeline. There's a bunch of classic Archie stuff to kind of keep people entertained. It's our 80th anniversary next year, so we're doing a lot of digital exclusives collect different classic stuff. And just it's lighthearted, fun stuff that I think people need to read now just to distract themselves from what's going on.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk. With everybody, but definitely here on the show over the past couple of weeks about what's going on in the comic book industry. Some people have said, "This is it. Everything's changing. It's doomed forever." And on the other end of the spectrum, people are like, "Nah, it'll be the same after everything." Our feeling has been maybe more somewhere in the middle, where like every other industry, some things are going to change, some things are going to stay the same. As the head of a major comic book company, what's your take on it?
You know, it's. I think there's some truth to both sides. Comics have been through challenging times before. There's been issues with distribution before. I mean, I guess the example people bring up often is Marvel buying Heroes World and how that disrupted the distribution channels. This is very different. It's a complete shutdown of the world. You know, it's not just not just comics, but I think we'll weather the storm. I mean, comics are a form of entertainment that people will want no matter what. Yeah. Or how they get it. I think the challenge for us is to support comic shops and indie bookstores and make sure that, you know, they can weather the storm as best they can. You know, Diamond's dealing with some challenges, but they're coming back. So the hope is that things can return to, I don't think there's going to be a normal. I think it's going to be something different. I think there's just going to be some more caution and some more challenges we have to face. It's not going to be a slow road. So
more VHS tapes packed with all the comic books mainly is what you're getting at.
Betamax. I don't want to be such a big bummer, but yeah, that's, you know, it's going to be challenging. This is true.
Way to go, Betamax. That's a better format.
Keep it real.
I want to say we've loved over the years the different sort of risks or like big swings you guys take over at Archie. Yeah. And one really smart thing I have been liking lately is the way you're sort of keeping the main storyline flowing through a couple of different titles. The Archie story, Archie and Sabrina. Like I feel like that's such an innovation that more titles or more companies should use to sort of keep a through line going between one character or a couple characters.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I think one of the challenges with the direct market as it was right before all this hit was people lost interest after a certain number of issues. So we relaunched Archie with Archie 700 and then, you know, you have that kind of standard decline. And so I realized, like, if we just launch with miniseries within the bigger series, you can still have the original numbering and then just have a new number one. but also have these crossovers that we never see. We never really see Archie and Sabrina. And so to have them pair up is really cool.
I love it.
And to have it roll over into Archie meets Katie. A lot of the initial blowback was, oh man, you're going to have Archie pair up with everyone. But if you read the book, you realize he's still with Sabrina and Katie just happens to be part of the story. So,
yeah, Archie would never date more than one person at once.
No, he's not, right?
Pete, like,
intrinsic to the mythos. Yeah.
All right. Well, the main reason that we had you on, though, is for the stack. We've been having folks on the past couple of weeks to talk about some of their favorite comics or comics they've been really into or revisiting at the current time. And when we were chatting about it over email, you mentioned that you read the entire X-Factor run that Louise Simonson did. Is that correct? Back in the 80s?
Yeah, I was.
Or most of it?
I read all of it. Yeah, I read all of it over, okay. I think, a couple of weeks or a week. Just what I found comics to be much easier reading these days when you're stressed out than novels for whatever reason. Just like you can mm-hmm. burn through a couple and you're done. So I was going to talk to Weezy about something else. So I ended up just reading it and I burned through the whole, I think it's about 64 issues of her writing it. And then it goes on for a few more after she's done until Peter David takes over.
Yeah. Wow. So yeah. We took a look back. We read X Factor 10 through 16, which isn't exactly the beginning of her run. I think she took over in 6 or 7 or something like that.
Yeah.
But that's like right when you're hitting, for those of you who need context, right when you're hitting the mutant massacre, when everybody's getting killed, all the Morlocks are getting slaughtered, horrible things are happening to Angel on the team. Yeah, and they're starting to very quickly ramp up on the whole Apocalypse storyline at the same time as he goes around and picks up all of his different horsemen. By the end of 16, you don't get to, spoiler, Angel turning out to be Death or anything like that, but there's certainly hints that that's going to happen very soon. The art, as you mentioned, is by Walt Simonson, and one of the issues is by Mark Silvestri as well, which is a fun surprise. What was your take going back, Alex, and checking these out again? Did they hit you in a different way, the same way? What was your take?
It really reminded me how much I love that roster. I think as a kid, my first introduction to Marvel was the Marvel Series 1 cards. And I remember seeing that X-Factor card, and I knew that those characters were in the X-Men, and I was baffled by why they were not in the X-Men anymore. And so that drew me to X-Factor. Like, these are the original X-Men. Why are they not X-Men anymore? And I jumped in a little bit later, but going back and rereading these from an older standpoint and just as a writer, I really respected what she did in terms of recalibrating the series. Because if you read the initial run, there's a bizarre kind of twist to the team. Like, the team's reason for being is a little flawed, to be generous. Like, we're going to pretend to be mutant hunters, and that's going to be our publicity standpoint. But then we're going to pretend to be kind of an X-Men type team in costume, and no one's going to notice. And it's like, goes against everything Professor Xavier ever said.
It is truly wild. Like, everyone gets after Hickman, like psychopaths get after Hickman for having a too complex X-Men universe.
Right.
But this is so complicated, what you just said. And like, even all the characters are like, wait, it's the Exterminators. Wait, but that's also X-Factor. But also they're wearing the X's on their shirts. What is going on here?
They all look the same. So I'm baffled by why nobody figured it out except for that one reporter, Trish Trilby. Louise takes over, she inches everything. She kind of fixes the whole thing very quickly and organically. Like, she doesn't undo. We've gotten to the point where people just undo what came before. She doesn't undo it. And she even takes Apocalypse, who's teased at the end of the run, and really elevates him to be this badass villain. And it's just interesting because the initial issues are so about getting from point A to point B. Like, Scott's going to leave his wife. The Beast is going to be unblue again. You know, it's a lot of like connecting the dots. Whereas I don't mean to rag on it. Like, the art is great. It's a nice run. But she really shines in that arc. And obviously it's Walt Simonson, which is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, the art is fantastic. You can't beat Walt Simonson for anything. Right. But to your point, it's interesting reading these issues in particular, because you really can see in the first couple of issues, and Jay Sinensen is pointing out here over the comments on Crowdcast, last couple of issues are Cyclops leaves the team for a little while, goes to Alaska, goes in search of his wife, Madeline Pryor. She's missing. He fights Master Mold. They start working this uber story of the 12, the X-Men who are going to destroy the world, which is one of those very late 80s, early 90s X-Men things. But it's, you can see it turning, like the storytelling turning from that thing Justin was talking about where the story crashes to a halt every time people are like, what team are you again, for pages at a time, to them just pushing it to the side, getting past it, and dealing with the cast and their emotions.
There's literally a moment in the early issues where they're having a meeting, and Cameron Hodge, who of course will become this uber ex-villain later, says, well, we're going to just pretend to be mutant hunters, and that'll trick everyone. And everyone's like, this is stupid. And then they do it anyway.
All the backstory stuff. I remember Rusty and Skids are just the names in my head. Everyone's always talking about Rusty and Skids, but they're just like sort of, they don't do a lot. I feel like they're always just like, well, we got to talk about Rusty and Skids. Well, did you check on Rusty and also Skids?
Yeah, Skids, I think they're back home or something. They're always just at home.
Yeah. They're always just, they weren't ever the center of a story in my memory.
But two things that were great in the run, I'm sorry to interrupt you, it's just Cyclops Master Mold story is probably the best Cyclops story. And then that scene where Angel basically sacrifices himself for, I think it's Artie, right?
Either Artie or Leech, I'm not sure.
Yeah, against the Marauders before he gets totally demolished was probably his shining moment as Angel. And that's in her first like five issues.
Yeah. It's also crazy that there's I think between issue 10 and 11, there's just a Thor issue where the story moves to.
Right.
Yeah. And it's just like, what? Wait, what? Angel gets his wings all messed up and Thor's sort of around?
Here's the crazy thing that I was going to say. I realized I never read these issues. Like, I read some X-Factor stuff later on, I think around the time they started living in Apocalypse's ship. But I never read the early issues because I didn't really have a much interest in the original X-Men. The concept seems so confusing to me. At reading this, when they had the little asterisks, they were like, see Thor issue whatever, see Power Pack issue whatever. I was like, well, remember that issue page for page. Like every single other thing, I was like, yes, I remember the Thor issue this ties into. I remember the Power Pack issue. I remember the X-Men issue. The X-Factor stuff, complete blank. No idea.
Wow, so this was...
Yeah, this is completely new to me. So it was nice to, several decades later, finally fill in the blanks.
Your childhood is now complete, Alex.
Yeah.
There you go.
Congratulations.
Good for me. Thanks, everybody.
I think she also does what she does really well is she kind of brings a Claremontian vibe to the book, which she doesn't have in the first few issues. And she, of course, was the editor for Chris's X-Men run for a long time. And then she became a freelancer. And so to have – it almost feels like it's now part of the family, and it's in the crossovers. It becomes more – entangled with the X-Men without directly interacting with the X-Men, because they really don't see the X-Men, I think, until Fall of the Mutants. They run into each other because they think the X-Men are dead, which is much later. But they dance around it and they have the whole thing, but it just feels more like an X-Men book, which you want. It's an X-Men book.
And it's also the sort of them out on their own, and then they're just constantly blowing everything all the time. Like Scott is just all the time being like, oh, I messed up. Jean's like, I don't know what I'm doing. Angel's like,
telepathy?
That is another crazy thing. It's like they make so much of like, God, I wish I had my telepathy. Still have the telekinesis, but the telepathy, I've lost the telepathy.
There is a lot of recapping. Scott is very torn about leaving his wife, as he should be.
It is great. He's like, I left my wife and son in Alaska. I shouldn't have done that.
Well, this dead body's my wife. Oh, well.
Done.
Yeah.
Back to the other redhead, I guess.
That is his low point as a character, I have to say, in those early issues when he just bolts. He's like, Jean's back. See ya.
Yeah, I know.
I know you were not a big fan of these issues.
Pete, you've said almost nothing for the last 5 minutes.
Well, we've got an esteemed person on the show. I want to give him...
Are you talking about me, Alex, or Alex?
I'm talking about our guest, Alex, not our Alex.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right. There could be
many Alex, to be honest.
Yeah, it's hard because, the art is great for the time or whatever, but it's kind of tough when you go back and read it now because it's the shading when there's action or fighting and stuff like that. It's a little, it was cool then, but, now it's a little tough to go back and read. Also, the recapping, there's a lot of like extra talking, which is a little annoying, and the stories are kind of all over the place. It's a little hard to follow. Plus the whole like Jean Grey Angel, like somebody walks in and maybe they they weren't going to kiss, but it was kind of like a moment. And then someone
that's a romance. It's a romantic, romantic comedy. Yeah. You love that.
I love that subplot because it kind of throws things for a loop. Like, oh, they're not just going to automatically get back together, you know, even though they do. There is actually it actually builds to a very nice scene later in the run.
Yeah. Sure, sure.
One thing that I really like,
Beast is great. Like, I thought Beast was solid. Cyclops was annoying as fuck. Just kill this fucking asshole. But man,
that story was, with Pete, the story with Cyclops and the Master Mold, the fight, the town.
It's amazing.
It's a great story.
Except Cyclops is in it, so it's not a great story. So what the fuck?
Who's your favorite X-Men?
Wolverine.
Cyclops. It's Cyclops. Yeah, he's been wronged by Cyclops.
He nicknames Cyclops Wolverine. We don't know who this Wolverine character is. Yeah, I never heard of him.
So, he's not an X-Factor.
No, he's not, which is the only X-Men book, as far as I know.
Yeah.
One thing that I really liked revisiting, actually, was how weird and fucked up the Morlocks were. Just in this really fascinating way where obviously, this isn't like the first Morlocks issue. If anything, it's one of the last Morlocks issues because they're all being murdered off. But the idea that the X-Men are kind of the pretty ones, which I don't think would work anymore because you have the Grant Morrison X-Men where you introduce like Glob Herman and Bird and whoever else who are really fucked up looking X-Men. Yeah. But this idea that like they weren't the pretty mutants and they had to live under the ground is so palpable and so sad. And to have all these characters like Callisto and Mask in particular, who's one of my favorite Morlock villains, being so angry, and you could just feel it coming through the pages, is great.
Yeah, and it's such a great contrast to the X-Men, who are struggling, obviously, with the whole mutant-human challenge, but they can pass as human. You know, Cyclops just needs to put on the ruby quartz glasses, and he's just like a guy who likes sunglasses indoors, but everyone else, you know, the Morlocks can't.
Pretty cool move.
Yeah, it is a cool move. Like, he is pretty cool. See, he
is very cool. You ever have ruby sunglasses? It would change your whole outlook, Pete. You should try them.
I should try them, yeah.
Yeah. Any final thoughts here on X Factor? Anything else you want to add in? Pete, any things you want to say that you really liked about X Factor?
What about something nice? Something nice from Pete.
Yeah, just say something nice for the people. Just straight up no. Justin, any final thoughts on X Factor? Would you recommend people pick it up?
Yeah, especially this run, it brought back the sort of emotionally wrought X-Men. And something we've talked about a lot with this Hickman run is we really like it, the three of us who host this show, but you're not ever in the characters' heads. And if you want to be in the characters' heads, picking up X-Factor, you get a lot of like thought bubbles and a lot of them just like very emotionally yelling at themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought this was great. I mean, if nothing for Walt Simonson art, because Walt Simonson's run on Thor is one of my favorite things of all time. So the more Simonson art you can see, the better. But I agree with you. I think Louise Simonson is a great writer, and it's fascinating to read this. I held off from reading more because I just wanted to focus on what we were discussing here on the show. But I do want to go back and read more of that now, particularly because apparently I never read it. So there you go.
Yeah, let me know what you think. I mean, yeah, Walt's art is amazing, and to think he was doing Thor at the same time is mind-blowing. Wow.
Because
he doesn't really miss an issue of X-Factor. He misses an issue here and there, which is understandable, but it just felt more like an X-Men book. It just felt like Louise brought this Claremont vibe to the whole thing and really made it count, whereas the first few issues just felt kind of forced.
Yeah. Before we let you go, Alex, anything you want to plug, anything people should check out during this time?
Yeah, I mean, The Black Ghost, which is my superhero vigilante comic, is available on Comixology Originals. So we collected that in a trade, and hopefully we'll get to do more. And, you know, Archie, we're still putting out those digital exclusives, so that'll be fun. And Archie Meets the B-52s just came out a couple months ago. So
yeah.
Oh, and I have a Star Wars novel. I should mention that.
Oh, that's – I've heard
oh, yeah.
That.
Yeah. Poe Dameron and Free Fall comes out in August, and it tells the story of Poe – with the Spice Runners that you hear you see teased in the movie. So
that's great.
That's awesome. Yeah. Congratulations on that. Can't wait to check that out. Yeah. Alex, thanks so much for coming on. Always good to see you.
Yeah, Alex.
Great to see you.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Good luck, man.
All right, folks. Now it is time for our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It's your audience questions.
Oh, yeah.
Marching to the questions.
As we always do, we're marching to the questions here on Audience Questions. Now, we mentioned this earlier, but if you are just jumping into the live feed here, drop a question and ask a question here on Crowdcast over on YouTube. Just drop a question in the comments. We're looking there. And also, if you're on YouTube, once again, give us the little thumbsy-upsy there. We love a little thumbsy-upsy. Love it. Let's go to some questions here. We got one right up top. I think you guys are probably going to know where this is going if you've been watching the past couple of weeks. This one is from Kevin. He says, the star's my destination. Who is a comic creator, past or present, you'd love to see tackle a title character they've never gone near, and what title character? Now, we will come back to that last part in a second, but first... Yeah. We are going to invite Kevin here. Ooh, hold on. Oh. I missed it.
You missed it?
Where is he?
You're landing. You're landing a ship.
Yeah. Oh, here we go.
Stay on target.
Okay, so we're going to invite Kevin
Unless
here on
screen. You've turned off your targeting.
We have a secret, or I guess now not really so secret quiz, the Starman quiz that is activated with the code phrase that Kevin used. And we are going to ask some Starman questions. We're up to question number.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I'll get to that in a second. Now, you are a Furby, I think is what it is. Wow. I can't tell what character because I'm young. No, it's Gizmo. I can't do
Gizmo
that.
Gizmo One. That's a name Gizmo. I've not heard since so before you were born.
It is.
Oh, Gizmo One. I get it. That's pretty good. Kevin, welcome back on the show. Definitely drink that Powerade so you can get ready. Justin, yeah. I'll kick it over to you.
Oh, this is the Starman quiz. And the rules here are it's all based on the Starman comic book, the 80 or 81 issue series from DC Comics. It helps to have read it, especially the early issues. When you're taking part in the quiz, and you can get a clue or a second answer by just all you have to do is slag off Cypher, Alex's favorite character, or the Punisher, Pete's favorite character.
Wait, I'm sorry, Pete, what were you just pointing to? You just pointed off screen as if the Punisher is standing next to you.
No, is the Punisher in your house, Pete? Is the Punisher there?
No, I pointed to Cypher in my house.
Oh, okay,
nice.
Yeah, I wasn't.
I thought you were saying, you know, slag off Pete, don't slag off me. That's why I was pointing.
Oh, okay.
You.
That makes sense. All right.
I got you. I thought you were saying that the person you're with right now is the Punisher.
Oh, man. That would be the
Pete is actually quarantining with the Punisher right now, which is a real bad idea.
Strong choice.
One of the greatest ideas.
And he considers not putting the cat back on the milk a crime. Great. We can skip all the questions that have already been answered, and let's jump right to the question number 7, which is where we left off.
Of
10.
Okay. All right. Right.
That's what we talked about. Question number 7. If you're not buying Jade, what are you buying?
Okay. Now, the real world substance is Bakelite, Bakelite.
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah.
And that is felt nice.
Oh, okay, great. All right. I thought there was more to what Kevin
said. No, that's just the right answer. It's,
okay, great.
It's a pivotal moment in the first run of the Starman issues, and where Jack Knight is almost killed by the son of the Mist, and he escapes just barely. It's great. Question number 8. Complete this quote. It feels good, right for me, feels good in my hand. This is a quote from another pivotal moment as Jack Knight becomes Starman.
Okay, so repeat the quote.
It feels good, right for me, feels good in my hand.
Okay.
Has he got to finish the sentence?
Complete the quote. Yes.
Oh, okay. There's another part after that quote.
That is correct.
It seems like that's the end of it.
Yeah, that does seem like the end of the quote.
That's an interesting observation, actually.
Feels good in my hand.
Feels good. Right for me.
Right for me.
Feels good in my hand. Could be talking about anything, really.
Mm-hmm. Okay, whose turn is it for me to slag off this week?
It is. Go for both. Wow, really raising
hands. And actually, Pete, I can see in your room right now the Punisher is in there hiding in that closet. No, I mean, that's he's Pete's, just hiding in there.
That's Pete's dream. That's a dream come true for Pete.
Classic 80s comedy.
Don't want Mom to discover the Punisher was in my room with me.
Yeah. Mom, we got a Punisher hiding in the closet.
Yes. So this is what I just read is the quote, and it's the people saying who are saying the quote to each other is the rest of the phrase. It's two people. One of them is a chess piece.
Ooh. Mm. Oh, I think I know.
Well, I think I know the chess piece.
Great.
Do you want to take a stab at it,
Ken? I'm going to take a stab and just say Bishop and Smith.
That's half right, but that is not fully correct. Thank you, Kevin.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
Oh, man. Yeah. Great to see Kev.
Great to see Kev. Now let's get to his question. He said, who is a comic creator, past or present, you love to see tackle a title character that they never gone near, and what title character? What would you want to see? It's tough to think of somebody's entire opus, you know?
Meaning like their opus on this new character would be?
Well, what I'm saying is, like, it's tough to think of. I was about to say, okay, who would James Robinson do? But I really cannot remember every single character that James Robinson has written offhand. But to throw out, like, just Brian Michael Bendis on Archie comics, I think
that'd be a good answer
because we got the teen speak going.
Oh, yeah, that would actually
do that. So I think that'd be a lot of fun. Thank you.
You just casually threw that out there?
I've been thinking about it for 5 weeks. I'm Kevin. Do you guys have an answer to this one? Jack Cole on Squirrel Girl.
Nice.
Interesting. That's from Mike Benecke in the comments.
I'm going to throw Dan Slott on The Flash.
Wow.
I feel like he could really, that could get him back into sort of his a little more freewheeling days, a little more fun, a little more lighthearted than some of the other stuff he's been doing.
Mm-hmm. Pete, you got one?
I'd like to see Dan Slott on the X-Men.
He wrote the X-Men, didn't he? Did he?
I thought he did. I don't think he's ever fully taken on the X-Men.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. Thank you, Kevin. Good question. We got another one, and we got another competitor going on here. Since the star is my destination, this is from Joe Crack. How many of you were fans of Tony Stark before the MCU versus after? You didn't like him before. Do you have feelings on how he took over the role of every scientist ever when all he's supposed to do is a pretty smart engineer? Okay. Here we go. We're going to bring Joe Crack into the stream. Why is this not working? Oh, my goodness.
Uh-oh. Here comes the cue good night. Just think of bringing Joe Crack in as like playing a sweet track.
Joe Crack on the track. Okay. Now, Joe Crack said over here in the comments, my heart was pounding because you were much smarter than me. LOL to Kevin. Joe Crack, welcome.
Welcome.
To the Starman quiz. Do you have an answer? Do you want to hear the question repeated?
Yeah, you can repeat that.
Great. Complete this quote. Question number 8. Complete this quote. It feels good. Right for me. Feels good in my hand.
As the actress said to the bishop.
That is correct. That is correct.
Wow.
Well done. We are getting down. This is question 9. As we learned of 10, a classic number of questions to have in a quiz. And as we all know, each of these quizzes has to have a physical challenge. This is the physical challenge.
Oh my God.
This is to be judged by a panel of the three of us. Give us your favorite Starman flying pose and why. So the flying pose and why this is the correct pose for this Starman to fly.
Interesting.
gonna have to pass on this.
Pass.
My computer is set up in my bedroom, and it's very hot.
Just fill the frame.
All right. Tell us on the why. He's holding the staff, and it's like basically sort of dragging behind. I like Stargirl when she's sitting on it more, but
that's a good answer. You just have to sort of do it.
Yeah.
I gotta.
Yeah. As we all know, physical challenges range from this to guessing a number to, you know, anything.
I'm trying my best.
That's good. The fact that you have a pole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, that is a sword? Is that a sword?
Yeah, it's a boken.
Yeah, nice. Practice sword. Awesome.
Wow.
Great. What do you say, guys? Do we take it?
I mean, listen, he had a sword, so I'm sold.
He's... Yeah. Threatening with a sword. Joe Crack, that is a correct physical challenge. And as like Alex said, physical challenges don't make any sense when we do quizzes. Question number 10. This is the rally one, the final question.
Oh, my God.
And this takes some thinking. Name all of the Starmen/women.
Okay. Name them all. All right. Ted Knight, great. Jack Knight, great. David Knight.
Yes.
David Knight again in 1951.
Good. That's a good because that's a
Midnight tricky one. Also in 1951.
Great.
Oh, there was that Batman villain that was Starman. Prince Gavin.
Good.
Will Payton.
Nailing it.
Mikhail Thomas.
That is correct.
Does Courtney count?
Yes, she does.
The Stargirl. Yep. Eventually Starwoman. I don't know Ted's girlfriend, but she was briefly Starwoman in one issue.
Yes.
I don't know her name.
But if you knew her name.
Tom from the Legion of Superheroes.
Good.
It's not Keller. That's from Riverdale.
It's Kevin Keller.
What you said. It's it's Tom Keller. I'll give it to you.
Okay.
You knew that. There's by my count, we have one more.
Oh no. All right.
Well, that was truly, I thought this was gonna take way longer to get even that.
I've been studying that for weeks. Just the case. Now
there's one more.
I'm not a big fan of the Punisher, but I will say that he has given us the most comic accurate movie in Punisher Warzone, the best Punisher movie in all of media. Ray Stevenson shoots a parkour guy with a grenade launcher.
Yeah, that was great.
So, like,
that was pretty awesome.
And that is an insult, technically, because Pete's favorite Punisher movie is Dirty Laundry. So that's his thing. your clue is the name of this Starman is also the clue is Wonder Wheel. The clue is Wonder Wheel.
Wonder Wheel?
Yes. It's very, very close.
I saw Mike Bengal's post. I'm like,
Jeff Bridges. Jeff Bridges, Starman. Good one, Mike.
There's two. I remember there was like a Batman villain I didn't know the names of, and one other minor one, but I gotta tap out. Yeah, I don't.
What do you think, Justin? Close enough, or
no? You gotta name the last one. It's good. We can setting up a head to head challenge.
All right, that was amazing. Great work.
Yeah, great work.
We'll try again next time. Thank you.
Wow, so good, Joe Crack. Way to be prepared.
That was impressive. Awesome. Super impressive. Here's the question, though. How many of you were fans of Tony Stark before the MCU versus after? I didn't like him before. Do you have any feelings on how he took over the role of every scientist ever when all he's supposed to do is be a pretty smart engineer? What do you think about that?
I mean, it's hard because... I feel like before the kind of like movies, like Tony Stark just became more popular and like, it just kind of happened. I don't know. I agree with that statement. I feel like he kind of now all of a sudden is kind of bigger than he should be, but it's hard to be mad at it.
He's bigger than he should be? Like he's too tall? Common complaint from you?
Yeah. Iron Man should be shorter. I agree. Justin, do you have a take on this one?
Yeah, I agree. Like, I think when a character becomes popular, I think it's powering them up is what happens a lot, where it's like, oh, look at all these other cool things they can do. It's like, oh, here's this new take, this new story, and he's way smarter than you think. But the more fun Tony Stark is the one who is like a little more reckless, a little more like messing things up. Not that I'm saying he should go back to drinking too much. That kind of a little like I stayed up all night gambling rather than going home and going to my Avengers meeting. That's a little more fun than the person who always knows everything ahead of everyone else.
Mm. Yeah, I think I was not really a fan of Tony Stark before. Like, I was aware of him as a character mostly through reading Avengers. But it did feel like Robert Downey Jr. nailed it. And then he became the biggest star immediately, not just in the franchise, but potentially in the world. And that certainly took over Avengers. Like, it became about Iron Man almost to the exclusion of anything else. And that's fine because he was great as the part. But I'm excited to see what they do next, you know, without him freed from the Robert Downey Jr. of it all. And now that he's gone into great franchises like Doolittle, it's all good for him.
Exactly.
Hey, come on, man.
Just as vital and valuable to us all as his Iron Man performance.
We have a question here from YouTube. Bandito740 says, I remember an old ep of CBC that had Scott Adsit. If that's right, how and why did he get on the show? Well, that's a good question. He actually came to the show and was a fan of the show when we first started. He's a big New York comedy guy. And then we started having him on the show every now and again. That was pretty much the whole story, right?
He's a big comic book fan. And I think he liked just wanted to come and talk comics. And then he's super funny. So we were like, oh, come on this side of the room where we sit and talk. And there then he was.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, Jen made that all happen, right? Because
Jen Grunwald. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Jen Grunwald. He's the trades editor over at Marvel, who also used to come to the show all the time and is awesome as well. Here is a question from Jay Sinison. If you were in charge of the X-Men's community theater on Krakoa, what would be your first production and who would star? Great question.
Dream job.
You got to go the classically trained actor first, right?
Dream job. Because really, my mutant power would be just being able to...
Acting?
No. That's not a mutant power. That's a regular human power.
Well, I'm just saying that, you know.
Can I just throw one out? I would love to see Midsummer Night's Dream and have Puck cast as Puck.
Nice. That's all
I got.
Yeah. I would have said Wolverine as Puck.
Yeah, Wolverine could work as Puck. You could have Mr. Sinister as Oberon, maybe. That might work.
That'd be fun. Or Wolverine as Snout the Tinker.
Pete with a Shakespeare flex. Whoa,
taking a celebratory drink of the old White Claw there, Pete.
Oh, it's not White Claw.
Where did that come from?
This is a good time,
Pete,
to pause and do our sponsor section where we talk about what we're drinking. Pete, what are you drinking tonight?
A little Dock Street again.
Mm. Same thing.
Order. Yeah.
I'm actually also drinking the same thing I was drinking last week.
Fresh cut
Peak, one of my faves.
Nice. I got a 6-point sampler. Ooh, there we go.
Ooh, so the jammer.
Citrus jammer. Little too ghosty for me. I didn't know what I was getting into here.
I love
that.
But the
it's good. It's kind of like soda.
Yeah, a grown-up soda. Now, Pete, where'd you pull that Snout the Tinker reference from?
Personal experience.
So, Pete, did you act in A Midsummer Night's Dream in your time?
Yeah, I was Snout the Tinker.
Oh, hilarious.
Amazing. Do you have any thoughts on this one, Justin?
Yeah,
Community theater on Krakoa, who would be your production star?
I mean, it's a tough question because I would want to go you could do Shakespeare. You could do perhaps
Gods and Dolls.
Yeah, like a larger musical might be fun. Something like that.
Yeah, Wolverine could star in Cats.
Yeah, and he has Sabretooth and Ron.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go right into this next question, actually, because it's a good follow-up. This is from Ben the Border Collie. Which comic event would make for the best musical?
Oh, well, perfect. Comic there event would make for the best musical. Executioner's song?
Attacks! Oh, the Executioner's song, yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
It makes
villain? Who's the villain in Executioner's song?
Strife!
I feel nothing but strife.
I'm Cable.
My shoulder's so sharp. My twin is Cable. Strife. I could keep going for a while if you want.
No, I think that's good. I would say turn off the Alex. Spider-Man, turn off the Alex.
I like that.
Bit of a Swiss miss with that joke, I gotta say. No, nobody.
Well, it must be. You got to be a fan of that show.
Yeah, super fan. Pete, you, this is a good suggestion over here on YouTube. Palmer Eldrick says The Wicked and the Divine. That actually would be a great musical.
Yes, that's great. Yeah, I'm trying to think of what are other great, like, sort of non-main, like, indie-er books, smaller books. Because I feel like they have a little bit more of that abstract flavor that might lend itself to being a musical.
Yeah, what about one of your Luna Brothers magic ones that you like?
Murder
Falcon. So Jason Innocent actually says, I'm actually surprised no one tried an Archie, Sabrina, or Josie musical. I don't know if this, I think this was just a play. Maybe it wasn't a musical, but Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa, years before he worked at Archie, actually did a stage production of Archie characters that he wrote where they were all having sex with each other. And there was, I think Archie came out of the closet and was sleeping with Reggie or something like that. And he got completely shut down by Archie Comics. They sued him and he had to stop the production. And now he pretty much runs the show, which is kind of amazing.
Yeah. Fun turnaround.
Yeah.
There you go. I feel like Love and Rockets would be a good one too.
That's good.
Yeah. Good question. All right. This is from Mike Beneke. Who do you think would be the worst C-list superhero to have as an arch nemesis? The Red Bee fought crime with his trained bees. Eventually, you would have to become allergic to bee stings and have to retire. Worst C-list superhero to have as an arch nemesis?
C-list. Wait, where are the
villains? Did you say, Pete?
Stilt man.
Why would he be the worst one, Pete?
Just because he's the worst.
No. Wait, in this situation, we're the villain and we're fighting a hero, a C-list hero?
No. Who would be the worst? Oh, C-list superhero. Oh, so we are a villain. That's right. Yeah. So we're the trained bees in this scenario.
Right.
Yeah. So what kind of trained bees would you want to be? What kind of trained animal, I think, is the question.
What kind of trained animal?
Yeah.
Just a series of chipmunks that are in human clothes.
Yeah, that'd be pretty bad.
Squirrels.
Very similar. Similar answer to chipmunks.
Even cribbing my answers all night, Pete.
I'd also like to be chipmunks.
Plus, what do you prefer, squirrels to chipmunks? Chipmunks way cuter.
Yeah, but squirrels are more annoying than chipmunks.
I mean, to actually answer the question, I would say like Frogman would be pretty bad. If I kept being beaten by Frogman, that would be super embarrassing because all he really could do is jump on people, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
All right. We got
Mario Brothers.
What? The Mario
Brothers? The Mario Brothers.
That's true.
Imagine having to beat the Mario Brothers. That would be tough.
This is from Shrusti. A little bit of a personal question here. When did Pete first hate Cyclops? Was it a case of hate at first sight, or did he come to hate it, I assume him, over the years, versus hating the concept of Cyclops as giant creatures with one eye?
I actually think Cyclops are pretty cool, the one-eyed, beings.
How do you feel about pirates?
As a kid, you know, like this idea of having a team where you're going out and then like fighting crime and like trying to do good. And then to have the shitty person on your team that is just fucking so annoying and like you have to work with, it just kind of hurt it for me. So just like, I think that's, you know, the first time I read the comics and I was just like, man, this fucking Scott guy is a fucking killjoy.
That's so weird to me. I don't know. Why is he worse than like Beast? Beast is always like,
Beast is smart and reliable and well, maybe not reliable. So he had an evil version of himself, but like, I can understand Beast and what he's about and what he's doing out there. Cyclops is just it's just such a shit show. It makes me so mad.
All right, fair enough. One thing I forgot to mention when we were talking about X-Factor, actually. So with the Morlocks, Callisto at a certain point, she shoots a beam out of her eye, which I did not know that was her power at any point.
She's like a Cyclops.
I had no idea. I don't think I've ever seen her use that before.
And it's weird because she's the lead. She's in a ton of stories. She's the leader of the Morlocks, but she never really uses her power because other people are always doing her work.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, there you go. Read old comics, folks. All right. Let me see. We got one here from Edward Doherty. We all know the Punisher would be a member, but which other comic character would be a part of Comicsgate? I don't think the Punisher would be part of Comicsgate, actually. Like, I don't think he would truck with that at all, with abusing people and going after people. That's not something he'd be interested in.
And he's not really a misogynist for per se, is it right?
Yeah. Ooh, this is the right answer. Ben the Border Collie in the comments says U.S. agent. I think that's...
that's a pretty good answer.
Yeah, that is definitely a good answer.
This is a hero who would do it?
Or just anybody, I guess.
I mean, villains probably would just do the villain thing.
Yeah, absolutely. We got one here. This is from First Hand Up Guy. First Hand Up Guy says, these tarts might estruation. What's a good non-Amazon place to buy comics, especially used books in quarantine? So I think he's trying to do the Starman quiz here. Should we bring him into the stream? What do you think about that, Justin?
He can come into the stream, but that's not the clue. So we should invite him in to see what goofy fuckery he's up to this evening.
Oh, what goofy fuckery are you up to this time?
There he is. There he is.
Hey! Can you hear us?
How's it going?
Good. Can you hear us?
He's frozen. Are you asking if I can hear you?
Yes,
you were frozen.
Us? Yeah, I can hear you. But I had to unplug my headphones to do it, and now I'm setting the back end. Hopefully I can still hear you.
Okay. We got a question here from the comments from Aaron. What's Nat cooking tonight? Nat, what are you cooking tonight?
Aaron, just real quick, we've got some ramen broth popping off here. We're making some shoyu ramen.
Nice.
Yeah, it's just a bottle of black liquid right now. But
yeah,
trust me.
You finally boiled down your catcher's mitts into liquid.
Yeah, I'm really not sure where that came from, but I don't. I'm going to just give you guys like a wide swipe. What was everyone talking about?
They said there was a thing on the floor that looked like a bucket of baseball gloves.
This is probably really good audio, right?
He cleared it out. He cleared it out. He had a bucket of baseball gloves.
Your secret softball team will again go unnamed.
Yeah. Nat, do you want to try the Starman quiz? You want to name all the Starman?
What's the question?
I feel like we're being bullied by our older brother. I'll do your stupid quiz. Wait, what is it?
Yeah. Nat, I just want to mention the best your tech has ever gone. So really appreciate you.
I'm honestly amazed, especially considering I'm wearing headphones as a prop because this audio is coming out of my phone.
Are those burn marks on your fridge?
Yeah, the fridge is next to the stove, and over the years, just burn the fridge, man.
Jeez.
Man, you truly are
cooking.
You truly are living large. Mm-hmm.
Well, Matt,
can we wrap this up soon? It's my brother's birthday. I got to give him a call.
Okay.
Well, thanks for sticking.
Bye, Matt. Thanks for swinging by. Thanks so much for coming on. Bye-bye.
Well, he just won the Starman quiz. I don't know.
That's great. What's the prize?
Not coming into the stream next week.
So he asked, what's a good non-Amazon place to buy comics, especially used books in quarantine? My answer would be directly from comic book shops. There's still a lot of them that are doing both delivery and curbside delivery if you live in their area. So that's really what you do. Go on their site. I mean, I'll tell you, this is like a little side to it. Oh, Edward Doherty says World of Books as a suggestion. This isn't exactly the same thing, but the local toy store is doing curbside delivery. And that has been a lifesaver. We bought a bunch of puzzles last week. My kids finished them in 2 days. We bought more puzzles today. They're probably
Brag about your kids, or is there some point?
No, I'm bragging about puzzles. Store. About puzzles that I
got so much fucking money, I can just throw it around, and my kids are so smart.
Mm-hmm. Fucking puzzle money.
I got puzzle money coming out of my ass. Wow.
You know, a picture is just a puzzle that hasn't been cut up yet.
Yes. My point being that the curbside delivery thing works really nicely, and it's great because we can support a local toy store that otherwise is having a hard time. So do the same thing with your local comic book shop if you can. Do you have any other suggestions for places to buy books or comics during this time?
No, I think that's great. I mean, just anybody. I'm sure there are people on social media selling comics, just calling through their collection, trying to make some money to get by. So I think any source like that is good. But supporting, especially local comic shops, I think is the best way to do it.
Yeah. Cool. We got another one from Jay Sinison here. As a theater improv kid, IO Chicago represent. I'd like to hear more about Justin and Pete's improv backgrounds. Have Justin and Pete ever done improv shows together? First of all, super insulted you didn't ask about my improv background, but whatever. I'll just sit back and enjoy this part of the show.
All right.
Wow.
Justin, would you like to go first? Or would you like
Alex, you could always improvise some some experience.
I'm reading off of my script right here. I don't veer from that. That's not what I get paid for. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Great question.
Do you want me to go first? I'm ready.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So
I mean, this is how improv works, right? You just say you go first. No, you go first until finally somebody goes first.
Yeah, thanks.
Very polite. I would have traded.
You're doing a good job of like hanging back and letting us fucking handle this.
Our motto is yes.
Fuck you up. Doing puzzles over here, man. I got puzzles coming on my ass over here. I started at Second City
in New York.
Back when I moved to New York,
there was a Second City.
What?
It was briefly in New York, Second City.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say before you cut me off. So there's Second City in New York. They had a theater as well as teachers. So I learned short form first. And then I went through all the classes and levels at Second City. Then I went over to UCB, same thing. Then I went over to the Pit, same thing. I've been doing shows at UCB more back in the day. And then Pit, when the Pit finally opened, I kind of got over there and started to do more shows and teach there as well.
Nice. I started doing improv actually in Boston, in college, really, at Hamilton College. Started the improv sketch team there called Yoda Pez. I didn't name it, but I was there for that. And then I went to Boston. I was on a satellite team from Improv Boston for a while. Moved to New York, started taking class at UCB, and was on a house team. I've been there for years. Sort of just closed now, so that's a little weird. But I was a director there. I started the character program called Characters Welcome, which actually every Wednesday in May we're doing a bunch of shows with Just for Laughs. Wednesdays at 8.
Oh, wow, cool! Congrats, buddy.
We're just rolling that out soon, so come check those out. I'm sure I'll talk about it on social media. But I've been improvising forever, and I think Pete and I did improvise together on a couple random times.
Yep.
I sat in on a show you were doing, right?
Yeah, yeah. I had you sit in a couple times with me. One of them was one of the hardest shows I've ever done at this college gig that was really an audience that was not having it. But we won them over by the end.
You're right. That's 100% right. I would like to. We should do an improv show, the three of us. Because we should say Alex has been a comedian just as long as us, maybe longer because he's much older than us. But he
that's not true. Pete's older than me.
I know. That's the craziest part. Yeah. But it's more on the sketch side. But you did, you took improv classes, though, I believe.
Yeah, right? I did. I did improv for a couple of years, at mostly at UCB, where I took classes and did sketch at the Pit. I don't know if I took any improv classes at the Pit necessarily, but I got to a point where I was like, I liked it, but I liked sketch more. That was monopolizing all of my time, so I kind of stuck with that instead of the improv thing. But I also, I ran the Pit for 2 years as artistic director, so certainly I got heavily involved with improv and watching improv and working.
You've certainly seen too much improv.
Yes, definitely. I've seen too much improv that whenever an improv team comes out on a TV show or something, I'm like, oh, no thanks. But yeah, we'll do an improv show versus this heavily scripted show that we do every week.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And hopefully I up until the quarantine, I did a weekly show at UCB, the UCB subculture downtown here, every Friday night at 10:30. And we would do an improv set to close out the show. So if we do come back and the show comes back, you guys can, you should come sit in with us. We'll stream it.
Count me in.
Awesome. All right. Another couple of questions we can run through here. This is from Mike Beneke. Is Harley Quinn Birds of Prey worthy of being the title of final superhero movie released in theaters in 2020?
Wow.
Oh, man. sad question.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, I feel pretty confident. Like, who knows what's going to happen with this? Who knows what's going to happen with the country and the world, obviously, or anything. But I feel like, by the end of this year, like Black Widow or something like that is going to be in theaters. Not necessarily in August or anything, but they're going to figure out a way to make it happen, I think.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think so too. I think there's going to be – people are starting to – I feel like yesterday, starting yesterday is when I finally was like, oh, it does feel like it's going to start coming back here sooner than it felt like the day before.
Yeah. Pete, how's it feel in Philly? You got the same bead on the superhero movie scene?
Yeah, it's coming back.
But that said, Birds of Prey is great. It's really good if you haven't watched it. It's so much fun. I had a blast watching that movie. It's not going to be the final superhero movie of the year, but it's definitely, I would say, worthy of the title if that was happened. That's all good.
A fun movie.
Don't forget about Bloodshot, though. Always Bloodshot. Edward Doherty says, which fictional comics nation would have handled the coronavirus situation the best? Latveria?
Wow.
I mean, so there was this thing, I don't remember which convention it was, but some convention was passing around over the weekend where it was like, which fictional city would you like to be quarantined in? And the choices were the Ewok village, Wakanda, Metropolis, I think. And then no, it wasn't Metropolis. It was Wakanda, Ewok City. Yeah, I know. Joe Crack is saying Wakanda is country. I'm aware. I did not tweet it out. I'm sorry. Wakanda, the Ewok village, a third thing. And the fourth one was Gotham City. And everybody was like, Gotham City? Why would you want to be quarantined in Gotham City? The only worst place to be during a quarantine.
Like, people die there regular. Plus, yeah, there was a plague there.
There's literally a contagion. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But Joker, Wakanda, I do think is the best answer. Like, if you had to be at a fictional place, maybe like Cobsix Nation, they'd take care of it in an instant.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the Ewok, what's second? Ewok Village?
Yeah.
In the trees? I think that's fine.
And you can eat as many Ewoks as you want, so it's all good.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's always like Sakaar or something. That would be great, you know? Go to one of those battle worlds, you know, be able to fight for your...
I don't know what this means. I'm going to read it anyway. This is from Jason. It's in Fist Hearts My Dustin a Ton. Great.
Okay.
Good question. The last one, this is a good one. This is a comment. Palmer Eldrick says over on YouTube, it'd be over in a day because someone would time travel with the vaccine and that's it. That is a good thought. I will mention, we talked about Squadron Supreme on our Stack podcast a couple of weeks back.
Yeah.
And they had a good thing about that. Like, it was specifically about a cancer cure, but they had a thing about somebody time traveling to get a cancer cure, the issues there with getting it from a supervillain and what it would do to the world and all of these other things. So maybe not as simple as you think. Last one from Joe Crack. Can we get a Pete's Philly food update?
Oh, how are you doing with great food,
Pete?
I'm killing it. I did Pat's, and I know Joe Craig was like, don't go to fucking, you know, Pat's and Geno's because those are tourist traps. But you got to do it while you're here. You still got to do it, you know. So I'll go to gyms. I'm working on it, Joe Crack. Oh, fucking A.
But can you give me your address so I can mail you a salad? I'm legit worried about UV levels.
Well, yeah, I mean, I am too. You know, I bought a bunch of lettuce and then went back because I didn't eat it.
that's how you serve it, though. You keep it in the bag in the fridge until it's bad.
A bunch of random lettuce is not a salad. There, you gotta have more stuff. Throw a tomato in there.
But I was really impressed with Pat's. Also, their marinara is fantastic as well. So, yeah, I've been trying new stuff, and you know, I'll by next time I'll have some more. Tony Luke's. Okay, all right. We'll work it out, Joe.
We had the roast pork at Tony Luke's, I think. Alex and I did.
Yes, we did. Fantastic.
Yeah, great. So good.
So good. All right. That is it for your audience questions.
Yeah, yeah.
Woo-woo. Now, before we move on with the next section, I actually skipped over something, and I'm sorry about that, at the end of our stack section. There were actually new comics that came out today. Yes. DC Comics put out a couple of comics. Some of them were reprints, but there were at least two new comics that were released today from DC, and that's not a mistake. They did actually come out on Tuesday instead of Wednesday. The first one is The Dreaming, number 20, written by Simon Spurrier and art by Bilquis Evely, or Evely, perhaps. This is the end of Simon Spurrier's run on The Dreaming, so it's wrapping up a lot of stuff that was going on there. I gotta admit, I haven't read it since the first issue, so there was a big lift going on there.
Yeah.
But, man, the art in this in particular is so good.
Oh,
really great art.
Worth it, just for the art. I mean, I read it twice just because I wanted to read it one time by not reading anything and just looking at the pages. It's really, really fantastic. The layouts, it's breathtaking.
I read the first, 14, 15 issues of this series and thought it was really great. I dropped off just randomly, I guess. So it was really nice to come back and read this last issue. It's a great 20-issue story following Daniel, who has taken over the Dreaming after Sandman died or left, the Sandman's son, and a similar sort of fate befalls him as happens to the original Sandman in that first arc. So it's really cool that it sort of rhymed with the original Sandman series, but just featured a whole bunch of new characters and new stuff happening while touching on all the characters from the Dreaming, which are so fun.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah. The only downside I would say was this was a title that I was really actually bummed to read digitally because the way that they have it set up, it is very dreamlike and the pages keep turning around and around. And it felt like the sort of thing that was very much built for the print experience. Obviously they can't control that or anything. I'm glad they put out the issue regardless. It was nice to have new comics, but it was real bummer to read it this way instead of in the print edition. But definitely worth picking up, just for a very pretty comic book. Next one to talk about, Daphne Byrne, number 4, also from DC Comics. This is written by Laura Marks and art by Kelly Jones. This is part of the Hill House line that Joe Hill is editing and putting together. We also reviewed the first one of this, I believe, in our Stack podcast. And this feels like reading somebody's nightmare. Honestly.
Yeah,
like,
so
not necessarily
creepy
in a bad way, but it's just, it's hard to grasp onto exactly what the plot is. Kelly Jones' art, phenomenal as always, but damned if I knew what was happening from page to page.
It is funny.
It jumps around, and just when you think you've got an understanding, it moves to the next thing. It's frustrating, but it's also effective in its kind of like delivery of this idea of kind of like this girl and what she's dealing with. So it's very interesting, fantastic art. It's an interesting story. I feel like hopefully the more you read it, the more it is explained.
I love Kelly Jones' art, great artist. And this, it felt like an episode of The Outer Limits or something that you like wake up and it's on and you're like, oh shit, okay, I should watch this. where you don't quite know exactly what's happening, but it's like, whoa, that was scary. And it's like, that's scary. That kind of a thing.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. There we go. Two new comics today. If you are hankering for stuff, also, I believe DC is doing digital stuff pretty much every day of the week as well that you can check out. Some of that is reprints from their giant size comic books that they put out in Walmart. And that is really it for the audience questions. It's now time for our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
Pete LePage.
Right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. I'll need a volunteer. We can do some trivia. We'll give away a free gift card to Midtown Comics for $25.
$25.
Wow. Nobody putting up their hands. No first hand up, guys, at all. Just say hand up in the comments over here, and we will pull you in if you're watching on Crack.
Yeah,
ooh, Ben, we got one.
Ben, we got one.
Order, golly,
there we go. All right, hold on. Ben, I am going to invite you into the stream correctly this time. Fool me two times? Shame on me. Fool me the third time? I don't get fooled three times. That's what I always say.
Wow.
Yeah. Tops.
I think you feel like you're being fooled. I feel like you're being fooled, Alex.
I'm being fooled by the system. Hey, there we go. Hello, Ben, the border collie. Thanks so much for joining us. I'll let Pete take it away with trivia here. Go, Pete.
All right. So I'm going to read you a question, listen to all three possible answers. Get all three questions right. $25 will be yours. Today's trivia is on the new TMNT project. Okay.
Would you consider that topical?
He's talking about TMNT2, Secret of the Ooze, the new TMT project.
Okay, here we go. Question number one. What is the name of the new TMNT Eastman and Laird project? Is it A, The Last Ronin, B, Finally Together Again, or is it C, Billy Crystal? So it's either A, or you could choose B.
I'll go with A.
A is correct.
That is good stuff.
There is new Eastman and Laird Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles coming out, and it is called The Last Ronin.
Amazing.
All right. Here we go. Question number two. When will it take place? Talking about The Last Ronin. Is it A, in the past, B, the future, or is it C, Julia Louise Dreyfus? So it is either A, the past, don't pick it, or it's B, the future.
Ah.
All right, I'll go with the future.
Future is correct.
Once again.
Woo.
Billy Crystal, Julia Louise Dreyfus. Couple of names to keep in mind.
Why is this happening? Is it A, it's because of an unpublished storyline from 1987 that was found? Or is it B, because we need this right now? Or is it C, Mark McGrath? So it's either A, and you will win $25, or you can pick something else and be completely wrong.
I think we need it right now.
I thought it was right. Agree with what you're saying. That's not the reason.
Both are technically correct.
Hey, Andy. Hey.
Just need you to say A.
A.
Yeah, there we go.
That's it.
$25, sir.
Amazing.
Like all great quizzes, almost any answer is correct.
Yes. Ben, great job. Shoot us an email at comicbookclublive@gmail.com with your name, address, email address, and phone number, and we will get you a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics that you can use online so you can stay nice and safe, still get some free comics. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. All right. And
Pete,
now the
before we move on to that, I think every week your third question should be, why is this happening?
Okay.
And you can just have a different reasons. It's a sort of a universal question.
Yeah. So Pete's third answer is equal a Robin Williams movie. Do you want to repeat who these celebrities are, Pete?
Billy Crystal, Julia Louise Dreyfus, and Mark McGrath. And yes, of course, Kevin is right. It's Father's Day.
Wow. Father's Day. Landmark Robin Williams film.
Incredible. Incredible. So that's some trivia, and that's pretty much our show, folks. A couple of things we want to plug before we go. What?
You plug your thing.
Yeah, I'm going to plug my things. Next week on the show, our guests are going to be Michael Morsi, the writer of DC Comics' new graphic novel, The Lost Carnival, a Dick Grayson graphic novel. Also, Brett White, a frequent guest on the show, is going to be here for our stack to talk about X-Men from the Ashes, number 168 through 176. You can support our show at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, subscribe on iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice.
iTunes,
please. Leave us a comment, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. Also, check out our other podcasts, Riverdale After Dark, our Riverdale podcast, rapidly, sadly, coming to an end for the season. Also, Katie Keencast, our Katie Keen podcast.
Yeah.
Star Guys, our new Stargirl podcast, has just launched. So please do subscribe to that. There's going to be a bunch of fun stuff coming out in that feed. You definitely should check out. And folks, we will see you next week, as usual. Thank you so much for tuning in on Crowdcast. Thank you for tuning in on YouTube. Thank you for tuning in on the podcast. We appreciate you all ever so much. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one. Have a great week.